You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A new panel will look at ways to reform Wisconsin's criminal justice system and make recommendations to Governor-elect Tony Evers. The Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Policy Advisory Council includes former state Supreme Court justices, former corrections secretaries, along with judges and members of nonprofit groups. During his run for governor, Evers called for reducing the state's prison population from 23,000 inmates to 11,000. Here he is during a Democratic primary debate in July.
This isn't about being soft on crime. I know that's what Attorney General Schimmel is trying to make this about. It's being smart on crime and diversions, making sure that people that haven't committed violent crimes are put into diversion programs, making sure that people that are arrested for drug issues get into drug court. We have to stop incarcerating people for nonviolent crimes. That's the bottom line.
Evers announced the panel's formation yesterday. He said he hoped it would bring people together from all sides of the criminal justice system. Cecilia Klingel is Associate Professor of Law at UW-Madison and a faculty associate at the UW Law School's Frank J. Remington Center. She's an expert on criminal law, criminal justice administration, sentencing and correctional policy, and community supervision. Cecilia, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, looking at this Prison Reform Council, the names on it, the goals as stated so far, what's your reaction?
I think it's really exciting to see such depth of experience from our state being called upon to give advice to the new governor about how best to move forward with criminal justice reform in Wisconsin.
Before we get into what this kind of reform would look like, is it important to make sure kind of at the outset that all kinds of stakeholders are involved so that somebody isn't out there at the end of the process saying, hey, wait, why didn't you ask me about this?
I think it's certainly important to hear from lots of voices and get different people's and stakeholders' perspectives on every aspect of the criminal justice system. Some will come through the advisory council. Some will come, I'm sure, in listening sessions or other outreach to the community to hear people's perspectives from across the state.
Now, one big concern that's come up a lot in Wisconsin recently, including during the race for governor, was just the sheer number of people incarcerated in Wisconsin. We've talked about this before. Can you remind us the trends we've seen over the last few decades?
Sure. Across the country, we've seen increases, dramatic increases in the United States imprisonment rate from the mid-1970s through the early years of the new millennium. And although prison growth has slowed its pace in Wisconsin, we've seen our numbers start to go up again. And we did just this past summer hit a new record high of number of prisoners.
And talk about the factors that have driven those increases.
Lots of different factors, though primarily it appears to be scale. Our sense of the amount of punishment that is due for criminal behavior has increased over time. And so we've imposed longer sentences on larger numbers of people, and our terms of community supervision have also gotten longer.
And do those longer sentences and longer terms of supervision outside of prison make us safer?
Well, it appears from almost every study that's been conducted that although there is a tiny little connection between imprisonment rates and crime rates, for the most part, they are independent of one another. And in fact, a number of states in recent years have decreased their prison populations fairly dramatically and have seen a corresponding decrease, not increase, in their crime rates.
As we look at what this advisory council might be looking at, is there some, I guess, low-hanging fruit, lessons we've learned from other states, easy changes we can make that keep people out of prison?
I think there are lots of changes, and everyone has their favorites, me included. But I think that there are some areas where there is widespread public agreement. In our state, a number of people seem to be coming together around the idea, for example, that 17-year-olds should be treated as children rather than adults in our criminal justice system. The idea that perhaps for some less serious offenses, expungement should be an option, particularly for first-time offenders. And a number of other changes that could be made in the way that we punish people and supervise them in the community that would make a difference in our prison rates and the number of people on supervision as well.
Are we seeing bipartisan support for those kind of approaches?
I think that there is a general broad consensus that we need changes in our criminal justice system broadly. What that looks like in the specifics is where people sometimes disagree. That said, in conversations with stakeholders across our state, I hear a lot of the same themes repeated by people of all sorts of different political persuasions.
Most of the possible changes out there aren't something that a Democratic governor could do alone in Wisconsin. And given what we've got, he would need Republican support in the legislature. Given the language in political races over crime and safety, we saw it in this race with accusations that Tony Evers would release violent criminals if he were put into office. Everybody's looking over their shoulder at the next attack ad, maybe. Is this something we can have serious discussions in a legislative setting about?
I would certainly hope so. It is true that crime has often been a polarizing issue, and we know that when people feel afraid, they are more likely to be reactive and more likely to be punitive. And so to the degree that people's emotions can be stoked and their fears can be stoked, we may not see a lot of change. At the same time, I do believe that our state has a lot of thoughtful adults who are willing to engage in difficult conversations, and I am optimistic and hopeful that we will see some very thoughtful bipartisan reform in the near future.
Talking to Cecilia Klingel, Associate Professor of Law at UW-Madison, Faculty Associate at the UW Law School's Frank J. Remington Center. We're talking about crime, punishment, and incarceration in Wisconsin. Governor-elect Tony Evers appointing a panel to look at reforms in public safety and criminal justice. Cecilia, we've heard the phrase school-to-prison pipeline a lot in recent years, the idea that at an early age, kids growing up in certain situations, low-income, more dangerous neighborhoods, people of color, end up set on a path that leads them into the criminal justice system and a path that's set at an early age. Are there interventions that Wisconsin could be looking at those earlier ages that could help take people off of that path?
There certainly are lots of things that we know reduce the likelihood that people will be involved in crime. And most of those have to do with their access to general social service infrastructures and to employment. So increasing job opportunities for people, particularly in areas of the state and low-income neighborhoods in particular, where there are currently are not as many employment opportunities. That gives children a more firm foundation. Increasing stability with respect to housing, access to medical care, quality early childhood programming. We know that all of these things create families that are stable, that are contributing to their communities in ways that allow the children that come from those families often to be more engaged in education.
Governor Walker signed a bill into law that would close the Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake juvenile prisons by early, I think, 2021. And the idea is we're going to have more smaller, more local facilities for juveniles. What is your read on what they're doing there?
I think that the idea that we would want to improve the quality of juvenile justice and corrections is a good one, a right one supported by most people in the state. And I am hopeful that we will be able to take this opportunity to think through what we want our juvenile justice system to look like. The challenge, of course, is timing and money. The timeline for this is very short, and that means that decisions have to be made quickly, perhaps not with as much input from as many stakeholders as we might wish.
Is this something where we can look to other states who have already been through this process, since we're trying to do it quickly, and borrow ideas that have proven successful elsewhere in the country?
My understanding is that that is already being done, that the study committees have looked at other models that exist and are trying to draw on expertise from other states. Obviously, though, we are unique in our own ways and need to personalize any legislation and new buildings to the particular needs of the children of the state of Wisconsin.
Earlier, you mentioned extended supervision. So after somebody's released from prison, they have to follow rules that most of the citizens don't have to. And people have pointed that as a big reason why people end up back in prison. As Governor-elect Evers looks at our incarceration system, is there room for improvement in that post-prison supervision?
I think that there's room for improvement always in any system anywhere, right? And certainly people within the DOC and outside of it have been engaged in conversations and thoughtful efforts at reform already when it comes to the number and kind of conditions that are being imposed and the way those are being enforced. That said, I do think that there are lots of opportunities to improve the resources that we give to the Department of Corrections to assist people who are coming out of prison and making a successful transition back to the community, and hopefully to decrease the need for punitive sanctions for rule violations.
Now, we're talking all at the state level here. I'm seeing in the news today that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is saying, hey, yeah, we can go ahead with some discussion, possibly a vote on criminal justice reform at the federal level. Are there issues you're watching at the federal level?
So anyone who's been sort of a close follower of federal sentencing reform knows that there have been a number of bills almost passed in the last 4 or 5 years on federal sentencing reform. I think, as is true in our state, at the federal level, there are many opportunities for improving the way that we sentence and punish people. Whether any of those bills will pass, I think, is a very much an open question.
Wrapping up back at the state level, are you optimistic that in the next year or two, we're going to see significant changes in our incarceration system in the state?
I am hopeful that there will be change and that the legislators will work together to build on the momentum that I'm hearing at the legislature and in speaking with people in the field. There's certainly a desire for change, and I hope that we actually see that translate into action.
Cecilia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Cecilia Klingel is an associate professor of law at UW-Madison and a faculty associate at the UW Law School's Frank J. Remington Center. We talked to her about Governor-elect Tony Evers' new panel on prison reform and the issues facing the state's corrections system. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. 'Tis the season to be merry, but not everyone finds joy so easily in the holiday season. For some older adults, the holidays can make them feel especially isolated and unhappy. People they used to spend the holidays with may no longer be around, and they might not be able to get around as quickly or easily as they used to, making holidays different than they used to be. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences. If you care for an older loved one, what kinds of things do you do around the holiday season to make sure they're still involved? And if you're an older adult listening, does this sound familiar to you? How do you deal with it? What kind of support might you appreciate? You can call in at 800-642-1234. Carol Bradley Bursack is a columnist, blogger, elder caregiver, and author of Minding Our Elders, Caregivers Share Their Personal Stories. She wrote the article How to Reduce Loneliness in Elders Around the Holidays for AgingCare.com. Carol, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, by coincidence, I saw Wall Street Journal today had a big feature on how many adults, and we're talking 60 and up, are dealing with loneliness. It seems to be going up over the years. Is this something that you're seeing in your work?
Oh, it's one of the biggest topics that I see is that people are becoming, well, our aging population is increasing, and we also have a lot of people who don't have any family around because people are scattered. So loneliness is a bigger issue for our aging population now.
And the holidays is a time when we're more likely to see some of those family members, maybe ones we don't see all the year round. What do you recommend for someone in that situation? They're getting together with an older relative. How can we do kind of a check-in, a little diagnostic to see how our older loved ones are doing?
Well, the first thing you can do for them is give them your time and listen to them. I'll start and end with that.
Sure.
That's paramount. But if you want to use the Christmas season to check up on them, that's fine. A lot of people suggest that because families get together. But don't turn it into a feeling that they are being spied on. That can happen. So if your family gets together and with your elders and you don't do it that often, I would suggest perhaps that you try and do it a little more often and just enjoy the holidays. It is a good time, though, for you to see if they can't get around, if it looks like they're going to fall. If you don't see them often, the holidays can work for them.
And whether or not we see older relatives often, let's talk about being inclusive for them in the holidays, because maybe these are the people who, you know, they used to run the show at, right at Christmas or New Year's or whatever. They got people together. They did the cooking. And that's just, you know, maybe physically not possible anymore. How do we meet them halfway?
We meet them halfway by respecting their wishes. I spent many years doing 5 different homes because people could no longer do their decorating. And I enjoyed it. I went from place to place, different in-laws and parents and an aunt and uncle, nursing homes, and used their own cherished decorations and tried to do what they would like. Sometimes it had to be pared down, especially in a facility. But those cherished memories mean a lot. So if you can do that, then you can also, if you can incorporate children in some way, older people generally like that. If you can help eliminate stress by letting them know that you're not going to expect them to do what they can't do, you're going to bring treats for them to give to their friends. You're going to do the cooking or bring them to your home. Let them know that the pressure is off, because that makes a big difference.
You mentioned earlier listening and active listening. And in that piece we referenced that you wrote, you said even if it's negative, if it's something that they're concerned about or unhappy with, why is that in particular so important to focus on and not write off?
Well, they may not be real happy at this point in their life. They are losing friends, often to death or disease. They are suffering the normal losses that come with aging. Even somebody who's really healthy is experiencing some of those. So aging does have its downside, but it's not all negative. However, just knowing you're heard can make a difference. You can't give the person back their ability to walk after a stroke, but if you can listen to them and have a little patience, it makes a big difference. They want to be heard like anyone else does, and we are too quick, I think, to kind of, oh, Grandpa doesn't, he goes on and on, let's just change the subject. Let Grandpa talk. Listen to what he has to say. And if you're lucky, he may tell a story that you want to remember.
Something I worry about reading your piece and that Wall Street Journal piece I mentioned and others is that, okay, as loneliness appears to become a norm, we'll think that it is normal and that it's just, you know, it's a consequence of aging, not much you can do about it. Give us some pep talk on not taking this for granted and on taking positive steps here.
I don't think we should consider it a normal thing, though I do think, and I may differ from some people on this, I have to feel that we ask people, are they lonely? Or we find out if they're lonely, because being alone doesn't necessarily mean lonely, mm-hmm. and people can be, as we know, lonely in a crowd. So what we have to do is, what are they like? What were they like through their years? As we grew up, as we knew them, were they very social? Then this person probably needs more socializing. And this is often the case, and in that case, you can talk to their friends if they have some who are healthy enough to visit. You can include them in what you're doing. Don't wear them out, but include them and let them know they're included. And come over and visit. Bring treats. You can do a lot of things that don't take a lot of time that will help. But don't force somebody who would like to work in a shop for several hours a day alone because he finally gets a chance into being this person he never was, because I do see a little bit of that. But it is true. Loneliness is huge, and as people age and lose their ability to do things, we need to make sure they're included in what we do in ways that they can take part.
Talking to Carol Bradley-Bursak, elder caregiver, author of the book Minding Our Elders, Caregivers Share Their Personal Stories. She wrote a piece on loneliness for older Americans and what to do about it and how family members can help out. Carol, a lot of people will find themselves in the situation where they've got an older relative now living in a senior home or some kind of assisted living facility, not in their own familiar territory anymore. Do you have any advice for that situation, especially around the holidays?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I had a lot of that going on with different people through several years. And there again, going early and decorating their rooms, playing their music if they like it, including them in ways that they can, makes a huge difference. Then you can also decorate their tables at the dining room if they sit at the same table often. Include their friends, see who they like to sit with. Maybe put a Christmas decoration on their table if the facility hasn't done that. Just make the holiday with your presence special. And for the meals, you can eat with them or you can bring food up early. There's all kinds of creative ways you can do it so that they can feel included in the holiday. But I have to underscore, listen, your presence in that room while they tell a story or even tell you that they feel lousy may be the best Christmas present you could give them.
Let's flip it around. Your advice is mostly for the caregiver or the family member. Let's talk to the seniors themselves if they're feeling lonely. Do you have any advice on how they can speak up and advocate for themselves and let people know what might help them out?
A lot of that goes to how well they communicated with family and friends beforehand. And people do often not want to ask for help. They feel they're intruding, and so they do hold back. But I do think that seniors have to reach out a little bit, let their friends know they would like to go along to the senior center or that they would like to have somebody to walk down to the dining room with. Just like somebody who's, they're no different than somebody who's 10 years old or 25 years old or 50 years old. If they need a little bit of companionship, sometimes they too have to reach out somewhat and give the right signals. But I don't think we should put too much weight on them because they are at a point where they don't want to bother people often or they feel often that they can't contribute. And so we need to, I think the onus is often on the younger people to try and include them.
And for people, older people who are feeling lonely, they might feel like, oh, it's just them, it's just me, there's something wrong with me. But clearly, from the numbers we're seeing out there, people who are feeling lonely are not alone. Is that an important thing for people to understand, that it's not just a particular problem with them?
Oh, absolutely. And I do think as much as internet use, phones, all of these wonderful technologies that become part of our lives and it can be incorporated with seniors, when they meet with family and the family, everybody's using their phone instead of discussing or talking or even listening to someone, these kinds of things can really make a senior feel left out. So I do think that seniors know that they're not alone. They probably have talked with friends if they still can communicate with their friends. And their friends may be saying the same thing, hey, I'm with a family, but I still feel alone because nobody's really interested in what I have to say. Go ahead.
It seems like, you know, there's a lot families can do and there's a lot individuals can do. Do we need kind of a culture change when it comes to aging to where we structure things, to where people aren't kind of left to their own devices so much?
Oh, absolutely. That's a long topic, but we need to restructure a lot. And we need to start with the fact that generations can really gain from one another. And I'm not saying we should go back. There was no particular era that was so wonderful. We've had problems always with that. But we need to remember that generations give and take, and that history, if we don't remember history, we're going to be in trouble. And these people, these older people, that's our living history. So if we kind of try and look at it that way and bring the generations together, not forcefully, and we don't have to tell the kids, put away your phone for the whole time or get heavy-handed with it, but just try and say, hey, you can have fun. Come to the nursing home with us for an hour and spend some time with Grandpa and see, listen to him, see how it is. And they can do it. My kids did it. They didn't always love it, but they did it. They went along, and they would take a musical instrument and play for the grandparents or do something of that nature, and it was so appreciated. So it is huge, and we all need to work at it, all generations, in order to make it better.
Carol, thanks for the advice, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob. It was very nice.
That was Carol Bradley-Bursak, author of Minding Our Elders, Caregivers Share Their Personal Stories. She joins today to talk about how we can help reduce feelings of loneliness in our older loved ones this holiday season.